Welcome to Aetherius Radio Live, the Hour of Truth with Richard Lawrence and Chrissy Blaze.
A very warm welcome to Aetherius Radio Live, brought to you on Body, Mind, Spirit Radio on every third Tuesday of the month. Discover the cosmic message for this age, revealed through legendary master of yoga and world-renowned medium, Dr. George King, between 1954 and 1997. Today, your hosts, Richard Lawrence and Chrissy Blaze, will be speaking about, well, I don't really want to call it a subject. It's more going to be like an initiation. The title being Adept Number 6, Archetype of Transmutation. So, without further ado, I hand you over to Richard and Chrissy.
Thank you, Nikki.
Thank you, Nikki. Hello, Chrissy. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. I know that we were talking about the fact that the U.S. Congress is now holding the first open hearing on UFOs in more than 50 years today.
Yeah.
And I did manage to, I listened to about half an hour of it before the show. Very,
was it dull?
It was very dull, but, but one thing that kept coming out over and over again, every single person mentioned that their number one priority is safety and security.
Personnel
installation and bases. So I sort of got the feeling, I don't know what you think, Richard, that they're trying to indoctrinate the public.
I'm sure. I mean, just so everyone, in case you're hearing this at a later date and not live, it's now 6 p.m., just after 6 p.m. UK time, which is 1 p.m. Washington time. And this morning, this hearing place. I think it's the first one since 1966, and it was very heavily trailed, and it was indeed a congressional hearing. And for those outside America who aren't familiar with that, that's senators and representatives, I believe, Chrissy, who come together, and they were questioning two people, one being a representing the Navy and one representing, I believe, the Pentagon. I think that was, or the Department of Defense, one of the two. And frankly, I mean, it's, I also caught a bit, and I've seen the sort of headlines. What I understand is actually that it finished an hour or two ago, and then they went into a closed session and not available to the public. And even during it, a couple of our people here were listening to it, as questions came up that they didn't want to answer, they said, well, we'll do this in closed session. So it wasn't exactly the full open disclosure that we'd all been some had been hoping for. I think Chrissy and I have been campaigning on this for so long. But what I would like to say, I mean, obviously, look, it's welcome, because I think one thing that did come over, I think everybody is saying this, is that it's no longer a pretense that they don't exist. And some of the sort of maybe not the official government representatives, but quite a few people, including congressmen, including former defense people like Luis Elizondo, is probably the best known, who's been involved in this in America at government level, are coming out and saying, look, they are not all, they're not American. I gather they said that. They are not American experimental craft. They're not, or a percentage of them aren't, they're not Chinese, they're not Russian, and although they won't go so far as to say, yes, we absolutely confirm they're extraterrestrial, it's obvious they are. So that's a bit of progress, but as you rightly say, Chrissy, you know, they are now sort of making out again, it's a big defense issue, which is totally absurd. And that's something the Aetherius Society was way ahead on. I mean, well before Chrissy or my time, I hasten to add, in 1958, a transmission was delivered by Mars Sector 6 called Demand the Truth. A very interesting one. It is published in an early edition of Cosmic Voice. And he calls on people in this transmission to demand release from governments, and virtually says that, you know, eventually they will start to be more forthcoming. And the progress we've had, and we've talked about this before in the last couple of years, is they call them UAPs now, I've noticed, not UFOs, but however, unidentified aerial phenomena, just to sort of change people's focus so they're not so embarrassed, I think. But broadly speaking, they are definitely saying they exist, and they're definitely saying they can't explain some of them, and they're definitely saying they have capabilities beyond the capabilities of their own technology, that's the American, or others. I understand, by the way, Chrissy, they did admit in it that China has its own UAP task force as well. That was also stated today, apparently. So they're doing the same thing, apparently. But anyway, way back in this transmission I mentioned, in 1958, Mars Sector 6 did warn very accurately what would happen. And I think the best thing is to quote what he said. You know, first of all, he says it must be and indeed is obvious to all governments upon Terra, which is Earth, that flying saucers are real, are physical, are friendly, are extraterrestrial. They cannot truthfully deny this through their specially conceived, carefully briefed propaganda organizations. They pour out official denial in the news syndicates of Terra. Then the ordinary man is left in the dark. So he makes that very, very clear. But he then gives this warning, and I'm now going to quote exactly what he says. I would warn you, though, when some governments are forced by the masses to come forward with an admission of our existence, they will try to prove to their masses that we are unfriendly. I warn you about this before it happens, so that you may be forearmed by this foreknowledge. If we even contemplated taking the law into our own hands, we would have stopped science from ever rediscovering chain reaction. This must be obvious to all right-thinking men. If this is obvious, and it must be, then surely from even a materialistic point of view, it shows we have good intention towards you all. We do not even intend to interfere with your free will. We could do so quite easily, within 2 minutes, if that was our intention. We could conquer you quite easily in 50 seconds, if that was our intention. Make no bones about that, Terra, but we would not dream of doing these things. It's our dearest wish, our greatest hope, that man upon Terra proves himself the salvator of Terra, proves that he, by such salvation, is ready to continue his journey through that experience called evolution. It is obvious that we are friendly. Had we not been, you would not exist. That's 1958.
Friendly is the word there, isn't it? Because it's now being released that, yes, flying saucers are real, they're physical, even they're extraterrestrial, but the friendly is the word that's missing now.
Indeed, And the whole thing is tied up in defense, you know, so it's not like they have a sort of a department for investigating extraterrestrial life and trying to open communication. It all comes under the Defense Department in the Pentagon and so on.
Yeah.
And so immediately there's an implication. This is something we're looking at because we're frightened they're going to harm us. And I mean, some of the cases that have come out, not just in recent years, absolutely prove what Mars Sector 6 said there. They have such advanced technology that they could easily take over the world. So they are obviously friendly, and I think that's a warning, which is coming true right now, you know, many years after it was delivered. What's that, 64 years later, I think.
Yeah. It was interesting what you said about the closed session, because one of the people did say that we are fully committed to openness and accountability, but there has to be a balance, that we've got to get the public trust while preserving the capabilities that, you know, are of national security interest. So what does that really mean, you know?
Exactly. I mean, in the Aetherius Society, you know, we have to have a certain, and we do have a certain degree of magnanimity. You'll have to forgive us if we sound very, very skeptical. I mean, they've claimed they've been skeptical, allegedly, for a long time. We're very skeptical about governments. And I think most people on Earth now are, rightly so. And certainly don't believe they're going to come forth now and just tell us everything. And they don't even pretend they're telling us everything. Otherwise, they wouldn't be going into closed session. But, you know, we welcome the change, the admission that these craft exist, the release of certain videos. We don't know what they've really got, but they've released some things that have allowed people to speak out For example, take Luis Elizondo and Nick Pope. He's either working with the government or the government are letting him speak out. And although he's not making great revelations, to be honest, they are making it clear, people like that, that the Nick Popes from Britain, Luis Elizondo from America, having worked in defense departments, that this is a real thing, that it's not American and Chinese and Russian weaponry or anything like that, and it's an extraterrestrial phenomenon. That's a step, at least, Chrissy.
Yes, yes it is. Yes, so you're absolutely right. It is a big step.
Yeah.
And eliminating the stigma for pilots and military personnel and citizens as well to report.
Mm.
Another thing they said that's completely different, they've never had before, is a methodical approach, a scientific approach to all these phenomena. So I suppose, you know, that could be positive in some ways.
It could. And they're giving a percentage, and we don't know what percentage, of their knowledge. But as Dr. King always used to say, you know, knowledge is a very, very much more limited thing than wisdom. And,
yeah.
You know, you have to turn to an organization like us, and we are the oldest international UFO organization in the world, as far as I can tell. And, you know, we are certainly in the public eye, I believe. And we are the source of the wisdom about extraterrestrial life.
Yeah, exactly. One thing that was never mentioned, or perhaps it was later on, which really surprised me, they never seem to mention the intelligences who man the craft. And this is where I think the public needs to come in and ask the questions.
Yeah, indeed. Well, we're in this show, we're going to be talking about an intelligence from another world who's been with us for, millions of years. It could be billions of years. I think it's 3 billion years possibly that he's been on Earth, according to one reference. An intelligence from Saturn, who's in a body, a terrestrial body, at least one anyway. It could be more. It certainly appears in more than one form, I believe. And who is one of his names only is the Lord Babaji. That's a name, though, that gets very much mixed up, because there are a number of people who call themselves Babaji who aren't this Lord Babaji. An absolutely wonderful, he's the greatest master on Earth. He's not, in his true sense, by the way, limited to sex. We're talking about him as he, because the form that's known is in a male body on this Earth, but he, as a Saturnian, is not any more male than female, or neither, as we know, those of us who've had the pleasure and privilege of studying the Nine Freedoms, which I do recommend to our listeners if you're not familiar with it. It's interesting, you know, with the UFO thing we're talking about, one of the connections that is sometimes made with the Lord Babaji by some people, and I can't confirm this to be correct, is that he is associated with one manifestation of Lord Shiva. And, of course, Lord Shiva is one of the Trinity. And I must say, Chrissy, when I looked into it, I was very, very disappointed in some of the stories, fables, whatever you call them, that are out there about the Hindu Trinity. Because, you know, I've got tremendous respect for the Vedic scripts. And Dr. King had tremendous respect for Bhagavad Gita and so forth, the Ramayana. And to see some of the depictions of these great intelligences as half animal is something close to some of the depictions of Greek gods, all mixed up with human emotion and et cetera. They've been debased. But if you go to the purity of it, Lord Shiva, one in one form, is certainly associated with a mountain, a part of the Himalayan range called Mount Kailash, also known as Mount Meru, I think in Tibetan writings. It's a very interesting place, that. There's lots about it out there. But one of the things, Chrissy, I've noticed about it is UFO activity, by the way.
Really?
There's quite a lot of UFO, said to be around Mount Kailash, and there are even accounts of the Lord Babaji having an encounter. There's one account, and I can't verify that it's true, that and it's not a very old one, that a UFO came down, and an intelligence that wasn't humanoid, it seems, in this description. It was serpent-like, but certainly friendly, bowed, basically, it seems, at the feet of the foot of, well, Lord Babaji was seated, but at his legs or at his knees, he bowed, and Lord Babaji touched and had some communication with this intelligence, according to a disciple who was watching this, and then the intelligence went back into its craft and flew off. So I don't know how accurate that is, but there's certainly accounts, and certainly there's a tremendous connection between UFOs, or Vimanas as they're known in the Hindu scripts, and Lord Shiva. I mean, the most famous probably Vimana in history, certainly one of the greatest UFOs in history, described in detail, obviously a large one, possibly a satellite, which appears in the Ramayana, and is one of the key elements of the Ramayana, the Pushpaka Vimana, was given by Lord Shiva to another person who deserved it. It was then stolen and had to be saved. In my opinion, that was the main aspect of the mission of Rama. It's not put over as the main aspect, but it's certainly an aspect. And that particular craft or UFO or Vimana was retrieved and then brought back again to Mount Kailash.
Well, thank you for giving that background.
Yeah, it's a little diversion.
It's interesting what you said about the 3 billion years. I just found the quote from a lecture delivered by Dr. King in 1962. He said, a man who has been in one single physical body 3,000 million years, I think that's a billion.
Right, that's it. Yes.
And who will stay on this earth another 3,000 million years. And I've also heard,
yeah,
I'm sure you have, or as long as humanity needs him to, which
indeed
incredible. I mean, it's unimaginable to us backward race who doesn't understand this highest aspect of love, you know, sacrifice. Really,
yes.
Amazing.
And of course, he's – sorry, you go on, please, Chrissy.
Oh, no, I'm saying how fortunate we are in the society to have learned so much about this, of Lord Babaji from our master.
Yeah, who knew him? And they had a tremendous love one for the other and a tremendous respect one for the other. Going back to the Lord Shiva depiction, which has a lot in common with that of Lord Babaji, because, as I say, one of the forms of them both is depicted as a sort of all-powerful supreme yogi. I mean, Lord Babaji is Lord of the Earth. He's head of the spiritual hierarchy. He didn't come for humanity because humanity wasn't here when he came. And I would suggest he came for the planet, the Mother Earth, above all else. And I think we've got some interesting information that kind of corroborates that, haven't we, Chrissy, which we'll come up with later in the show about his connection with the Mother Earth and later and her initiation too. But he was an all-powerful, in this depiction, supreme yogi, even revered by the rishis of old, who spreads his power in a benevolent and uncompromising way from this his retreat in the Himalayas, manifesting the light of spiritual evolution. And in the case of Lord Shiva, through the elimination of all obstacles in its way. And of course, that's why he's often depicted as the destroyer. And you could say, and I've only just come up with this one, Chrissy, we've moved from the age of elimination to the age of illumination.
Oh, I like that.
What say
one.
You?
Yes. But illumination has to be a lot higher.
It's long been and remains the goal of spiritual aspirants to gain a connection with this Mahavatar, as he's often called, at whatever cost, including physical life itself if necessary. It's interesting, actually, in that wonderful book by Paramahansa Yogananda, Autobiography of a Yogi, he recounts one or two things about the Lord Babaji, and one of them is an incident in which a student climbed up in his pursuit and desire to be his student, was instructed by Lord Babaji to jump off the ledge of the cliff. You probably remember it. The face of it, to most people, it sounds incredibly brutal. But to the genuine searcher and the advanced searcher, which this individual obviously was, one life is neither here nor there. That they are in search of eternal nirvana. And he actually, as a result of his faith in doing that, and the karma that he manipulated in obeying the Lord Babaji, he actually lived not a full life, but he was resurrected and came back. But it's interesting because there is an account in the old Hindu scripts, by the way, of Lord Shiva pushing someone, a disciple of his, but someone who became a fallen disciple of his, Ravana, according again to some accounts, off a ledge of this same mountain, which is an interesting parallel.
Mm, yes, it is. Now,
so,
Richard,
yeah.
I was going to ask you something. As we know, the Lord Babaji is like the epitome of spirituality and
yes.
Something that we aspire to follow. Well, because he is the epitome and we're coming into this new age, the Aquarian age, and with the initiation of Earth, there's a massive change taking place. And I know that you were talking about something earlier about the Lord Babaji and how this change is manifesting, which was so interesting, and I wonder if you could share that.
Yes, I think, you know, in the Nine Freedoms, to the very best of my knowledge, there is only one statement made by Mars Sector 6, after which he says this: your internal vibrations have been altered by these utterances. Do not ever again slip from the path, for if you do, your fall will be doubly hard. Now, that's a warning, and just prior to that, he refers to it, says, guard well this sacred wisdom, for even though you understand it not, there will come a time when you will. And the wisdom he's referring to there is the change you're talking about, actually, and it's the change, and it's a vast topic. It affects everything we do. It completely explains why service has to be the order of the day, not just on this earth, but throughout the universe, actually. And it's the change from creation, preservation, transmigration to creation, preservation, transmutation. And that's why we're focusing, in this particular program, we're talking about adept number 6 as the archetype of transmutation. It's obvious it seems to me, I can't say it's obvious, but it seems to me that, I'm sure it's not just to me, there must be very good reasons why the Lord Babaji in these days chose, agreed, if you like, to become one of the adepts. And these are the adepts, the warriors who've saved us in the major battles, the alien mission, Operation Carmelite. Forgive me if you're a new listener. We can't go through those, but you will find details about those both at the Aetherius Society on our website, aetherius.org, and also in our literature and in previous shows. And after, it was in fact right at the end of Operation Carmelite, he played a massive role. He played, you could say, the massive role in that it was he who transmuted the most evil terrestrial incarnation or individual ever in history, an individual who may have even existed on Maldek from where humanity came 18 million years ago, and been a dark force there, as he certainly continued to be here. And that intelligence is given a number of names. One is Satan, of course. It was the final battle on February 24th, 1969, when Satan was finally transmuted, and the master who fought that battle was the Lord Babaji, but he fought it as adept number 6, or let's put it this way, he then became adept number 6, and after the battle, after that mission, remained adept number 6, and is to this day known as adept number 6 among his many other designations. And that's very, very significant, because he is now the archetype of transmutation. Whereas in the past, he's been seen certainly in yoga circles generally as an archetype of detachment, of mastering the inner powers, of tremendous love, tremendous compassion, tremendous wisdom, the greatest of all masters on earth, as I say, even revered by the rishis of old, but not as a warrior, not as a transmuter so much. And he's now decided in this age, and I go back to that quote I gave there from the Seventh Freedom, to adopt this persona, if that's the right word, this form. It's not new to him, and Dr. King has explained that. He has a history going way back of spiritual warfare. We need to talk a little bit about what that means, I think, Chrissy. But cutting a long story short, it is taking an active role as a transmuter of evil. And because he's done that, all the ascended masters on earth, without any exception, and all the spiritual aspirants upon earth, without any exception, should. I'll say in the case of the ascended masters, they do. They don't need to be told twice. But in terms of humanity, all serious spiritual students now have to take that transmuting role, as at least as part, as a manifestation of their evolution.
That's kind of a shocking change. It's an amazing change, isn't it?
Mm.
And I think I was reading something, a lecture or an address actually from our master the other day, which helps, I think, us and listeners to understand what this means. And I wonder if I might just read a bit of this.
Yes, please do.
Please do. From that.
Yeah.
It's from an Operation Carmelite address on February the 24th, 1980. And Dr. King says, can you imagine what it meant to the adepts, especially somebody like Lord Babaji, when he had to, for your sake, kill, even though the way he did it was illegal according to the law of karma, transmutation. Even though when he did this, he had no hatred in his heart whatsoever, but still, it must have been against many of the spiritual aspirations of Babaji. If you knew him as I do, you'd know that. But neither, even in the light of all his spirituality, he could not dodge the last great showdown in Operation Carmelite, the time when he had to meet face to face in mortal combat, in mortal combat. This means fighting when he had to meet face to face the last aspect of Satan. And he won. And let us thank God he did win. And our master goes on to say, there comes a time when one does have to fight for one's belief. There
yes.
comes a time when one has to stand up and be counted. Useless sacrifice is no good in this respect. Had the adepts sacrificed themselves, Carmelite would have been lost. And by now, this earth would have been in atomic ruins.
Brilliant, Chrissy. And I think a key statement that you've just read there are the words which I wrote down as you read them, a legal transmutation. In case anyone misheard it, it's not illegal, it's a legal transmutation according to the law of karma. And that's the big difference, that these battles fought by the great masters, by the adepts, are done with karmic permission. They aren't like the wars we have on this earth. And it strikes me as very interesting, Chrissy, that Dr. King himself, who is a great warrior, and we can now say that he was one of the adepts too, in fact he was adept number one, and that was not in his physical body. When he left his body, he joined up and became that aspect. All the physical body was a part of adept number one, has to be said, as Dr. George King. But he was on this earth, on this realm, a conscientious objector. He was a pacifist. And it's very interesting, isn't it? As it's like, there's a saying, actually, I think he once said that in order to be a true pacifist, you'd have to be able to fight. It might also be that to be a true spiritual warrior, you must have demonstrated pacifism. Because then you're coming right from the right place. You're saying, no, I'm not going to fight. I'm not going to kill unless I have karmic permission to do so. And none of the wars fought on this earth are fought with karmic permission, because people don't have the ability or to gain that permission. So it's a very different thing than we might we might imagine. I mean, in fact, Dr. King made a very interesting statement that it was essential for the Great White Brotherhood throughout the centuries to be completely pacifistic. They had to have that as an essential, and this is the phrase he used, reactory principle to the average thought of mankind. So they weren't wrong, and although he wasn't their, as it were, political leader at the time, he certainly is now, but he was certainly their spiritual leader, that was what was being demonstrated for a very, very good reason. And that has changed in this age of transmutation.
Thank you, Richard. I think it's time for a break now, and we'll carry on afterwards. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Well, gosh, thank you, Richard and Chrissy, for amazing and the key continuing in-depth revelations about such an elevated being. Thank you. You are listening to Aetherius Radio Live with hosts Richard Lawrence and Chrissy Blaise talking about Adept Number 6, Archetype of Transmutation. Where we still have a few more days of the magnificent energies pouring down from that shining temple, satellite number 3, during which all spiritual actions performed with a selfless motive are enhanced by 3,000 times. Sadly, it will be leaving orbit of our world at 12 midnight GMT on May 23rd. So please feel welcome to join with us in our special service to mark the last hour of the first spiritual push for 2022. This will be live streamed from the Aetherius Temple in London, led by Right Reverend Richard Lawrence. So let us continue to make the most of these wonderful energies in these remaining days. As always, you are warmly invited to join in with our service held during this period to send out much needed spiritual energy to our world, details of which are on aetherius.org. Wednesday, May 25th, sees another King Yoga Experience event to be live-streamed from the Aetherius Temple in London, which starts at 6:45pm BST, which will be led by Darren Ball and is entitled Awakening Your Psychic Powers. So again, more details on aetherius.org. On the next Aetherius Radio Live show on June 21st, Chrissy will be joined by her guest, Brian Kniep. So that's it for now, and I'm very pleased to hand you back to your hosts, Richard and Chrissy.
Thank you, Nikki.
Hello, Chrissy.
Hello. I wondered if we might talk a little bit more about this change from migration to transmutation, because in the past, as you know, it was the evolutionary path for humanity to take. And now there's been this huge change. And it was the fact that the material world was just illusion that was taught and you know, is true in a way, yes. But in order to advance, one, as you mentioned, has to actually destroy or eliminate that. And now, of course, instead of elimination, we're into illumination, which is great. But I wondered if we might talk a little bit more about that, why in the past it was acceptable and not now, for example.
Yes, well...
Humanity wasn't ready for it, or...
It seems that way, doesn't it? I could give my opinion, and that's all it is an opinion, that in the past... I'll put it bluntly as the way I see it, and I can be wrong here, but humanity is essentially so selfish that we needed a kind of a selfish motive almost. Even though it's a spiritual path, the motivation is always, you know, well, you can leave all that behind. You can, you know, take up your begging bowl in the old days. You don't have any of those responsibilities. You just focus on your own spirituality and your own development. And the rewards are wonderful bliss, complete freedom, nirvana. And you just separate off and, you know, join up with the divine. And it's a very appealing to a sort of selfish-minded person, which humanity is, sadly, who wants to take to spiritual things. as against, look, go out and help your everybody, you know, get stuck in the serve, in the clatter, in the noise, in the bad vibrations, in the, you know, fight evil by speaking truth, by radiating light, not, by the way, by killing. We aren't suggesting that at all. We're not in the position of the adepts at all to do that, but certainly by radiating light and by praying and by speaking truth, those are some weapons in the armory of a spiritual aspirant in this day and age. And it's an interesting, I think a lot comes back, Chrissy, in my view, to a very important event which took place on November the 1st, 1956. And it was a council meeting which commenced on Shambhala, at which certain major decisions were made for the future of life on Earth. And in his editorial in Cosmic Voices, Dr. King described this revelation of this meeting to be, and I quote, "the most vitally important announcement of modern times." And it was, interestingly, the intelligence that revealed that some of the attenders was Mars Sector 9, not an intelligence we come across very often. He revealed it would be attended by the Lord Buddha, the Master Jesus, Ascended Masters M and KH, among others. But the stupendous revelation made by Mars Sector 9 was that it would be attended by two Lords of the Sun who would travel in a vehicle from the Sun to Shambhala. Now, to the best of my knowledge, it's the only meeting that I know of, or any type of meeting in which has been attended on this Earth, or connected to this Earth, as Shambhala is, by Lords of the Sun. And for those who are familiar with, and I'm not saying it is the only one, it's just the only one that I can think of or know of or have come across. Now, when the initiation of Earth took place, which again, regular listeners to Aetherius Radio Live will know about, this was done, of course, through a Lord of the Sun. And tremendous measures had to be taken for that Lord of the Sun, even from a distance, to bring, you know, not to destabilize the solar system and so on by its very presence. Now, okay, that was a very different thing. That wasn't attending a meeting. That was radiating massive powers to this Earth. So it is different. But here we have that meeting attended by two Lords of the Sun, above even Lords of the Saturn. I don't know, but I would be surprised if the Lord Babaji wasn't at it, at that meeting. It would certainly surprise me. We don't know. We haven't been told. But I'd like to focus on just one decision that was made at the meeting, and it was described by the Master Aetherius in these words, and I quote, "A new language will be brought into being. This is to be the language of direct action. The decision was made in this way so that all who heard it could meditate upon that sentence exactly as pronounced." I'll read the sentence again. "This is to be the language of direct action." Now, transmigration, the old way, is not direct action. I actually don't know when that way, that path was introduced, the path of transmigration. And this is why, of course, Shiva, Lord Shiva, is depicted as the destroyer. He's destroying all the obstacles in the way, the material obstacles. And as you rightly say, in the old yogas, they're offered this world, this material world, is regarded as maya or delusion. Whereas I much prefer, I think it's greatly enhanced word, brilliant word, by Mars Sector 6 in his Meditation for This Age. He calls it a reflection. I think that's more balanced, more useful, more revealing. It's not, he says, it's not the life. The life is, and these are my words, but this is what he's saying, is the energy level. But the material level, the physical world, this is the reflection that you see with the two eyes. And that, I think, is a more useful way of looking at it personally, especially with this language of direct action. So transmigration is not direct action. It's detachment from action in the physical world. It's even detachment from basic thought. And when cosmic consciousness was attained through it, which it was, and ascension was too, and ascension in the sixth freedom, which is ascension, the word transmigration is used, by the way, still used in the sixth freedom, talks about, yes, terrestrial man climbing from the pit of terrestrial rebirth so that he may then unhampered begin to climb the mountain of transmigration. So that was the order of the day. Then we get this big revelation in the seventh freedom where, as I say, we're warned not to slip from the path again, having heard it. It's now transmutation that's given to us. But at its zenith, detachment from all mind could be obtained. Cosmic consciousness, timelessness could be attained. But now the new language means engaging in a world of physical and mental experience. And the purpose is to transmute. So the more I think about it, it is a change from elimination to illumination, actually, Chrissy, because it's, the transmuting force is light. And it raises it, and it raises it to a higher level. And it's a much more complete concept, which Dr. King, and this was a shocker when I was absolutely stunned by this, said even applies to a galaxy. A galaxy as an intelligence. Even a galaxy cannot transmigrate its way back to God. It has to transmute all matter within it. So I would conclude, really, that the great change from transmigration to transmutation, which was announced by Mars Sector 6 in the Seventh Freedom, was really initiated in essence as a language of direct action. Different phrase, but has the same implication at this council meeting and done on the authority of, as I say, Lords of the Sun. He says that they landed on Shambhala to give their light and love to the beings of the Great White Brotherhood so that the whole earth may reap the benefit. So it was obviously a language even for them too, even for the wonderful, compassionate, ascended masters without whom we wouldn't exist for longer than certainly seconds, maybe certainly a few minutes, just by their very presence here. Even they are going through change.
That was an absolutely stupendous meeting, Richard. We have no idea on this planet, do we? That certain major decisions for the future of all life on Earth were made at this very, very interesting concept that you're discussing here. These years in the 1950s were so powerful, weren't they? It's the beginning of not
they
only
were.
The Sirius Society, our Master's mission, but so many other missions took place as well at that time. And I was just going to ask you, Richard, what you thought. We know that the Sanat Kumara was replaced by the Lord Buddha, and it was very interesting that he was there at that. The Lord Buddha was there at this meeting. Do you think, I mean, obviously this is just an opinion, but I wonder if this was the time also when this replacement took place? Or...
Well, I don't know, and it's a very sad fact. We might as well come clean about this, and it's not on our watch because it's way back, and it certainly wasn't on Dr. King's knowledge or done with his permission. But the change which you just mentioned there from the Sanat Kumara, who'd been here for 18 million years, who may be the intelligence, and I say maybe because I don't know at all, who introduced that path of creation, preservation, transmigration, it must have been absolutely essential for humanity. Humanity, as you rightly said there, Chrissy, cannot have been ready for this higher path, more complete path of transmutation, because it involves service. It involves getting your hands dirty. It involves sacrifice before you ever attain cosmic consciousness, not after. But it's interesting, as you say, that the Sanat Kumara, and I don't know that particular changeover, if that's the word, from the Sanat Kumara to the Lord Buddha, which happened in 1956, so it's the same year, was done at that time because the recording of that event, it was recorded, there was a transmission through our master describing it, has been lost, and I've been told it was copied over by somebody who I won't name, who's not physically alive now, in those early days. So that's a tragedy, because we would have then had a description of the Sanat Kumara himself. But anyway, we can't do anything about that. But yes, certainly he was replaced by the Lord Buddha. And I think that's very, very interesting, that change. And it shows, I think, the sort of absolute perfection of balance in the cosmic plan. Because we associate, on Earth at least, from his incarnation at least, the Lord Buddha with the inner path of peace, the inner path of detachment from material things. And he was very, very strict. I think we underestimate how strict and uncompromising he was with his close students, even family members. It was very impersonal in his approach in order to help them to attain enlightenment. It's got watered down, like all the religions have got watered down. Some have been modified. But he is associated with that inner path. And isn't it interesting that at a time when the Lord Babaji has adopted what I'm calling the archetype, if you like, the representation, the sort of manifestation of transmutation in his persona as adept number six, and his involvement, which continued with the six adepts thereafter, and as far as I know, it continues to this day. I mean, they are all revered, for example, on the planet Gotha. There's a flame to them on the planet Gotha. We've talked about Gotha before. Please do look it up if you're interested. They have a shrine, do they not? Or actually, it's a flame, isn't it? To the six adepts, even though at that point, the Lord Babaji wasn't among the six when that battle took place. They must have known that he was absolutely interconnected with them. So at the same time as you have this going on, this direct action, this transmutation, this fighting the evil, where the Lord Babaji is now in, as well as spiritual head, political head of all spiritual intelligences on the surface of Earth, without any exception, everyone on Earth who has any intelligence at all should defer to Lord Babaji if they're able to, if they're given that opportunity to. At that same time, you have the Lord Buddha brought to Shambhala to hold a flame there, who is connected with the inner path. And that's such a wonderful balance. You know, it reminds me of that quote from the Master Aetherius, 1957, reach outwards, reach upwards, but do not ever, my brothers, please forget to reach inwards. For although the outside world has much to offer, it cannot offer you one small part of what the inside world can offer you. So perfect balance, I would suggest.
Yeah, it's so fascinating, Richard, that no longer is the inward path the main one on this earth as it has been. And this change was initiated at this time through the great masters of earth, and presumably then through the higher realms down to this physical plane. But it's also interesting that it still hasn't yet really manifested, certainly not in the New Age movement yet, that this is the new path. And so this is something, of course, the Aetherius Society, our motto is service is the jewel in the rock of attainment.
Yes. Well, I you know, I'm glad you mentioned that. I mean, just as a little aside, really, and it's kind of humorous, but it's also a bit sad, very sad. But anyway, we'll look at the humorous side of it. I received a release from a very leading New Age journal in the UK. I'm not going to name it, but they did send out a release telling us, the listener, the reader rather, how we could charge up our third eye. And it was a particular way, the way to charge up the third eye, or the Christ chakra, as they refer to it. And the way was, and the answer was, to make a certain particular type of smoothie. They even gave the recipe.
No.
They gave the recipe. Yes, you have to have, I can't even recall it now, but, you know, a certain amount of papaya or whatever it was, a certain amount of this, a certain amount of that, and the other, and drink it. And, yeah, so I'm afraid the New Age movement, even the well-intended, well-meaning New Age movement, is miles away from these great happenings that are going on. But as you right, I agree with you, it must percolate through the realms, I would think. It must cause more direct action from higher realms with lower ones, because that's the example of the adepts.
Right.
I mean, the adepts went down into the lowest ones. But I would suggest there could well be far more interchange now between and permission given, possibly, for higher realm intelligences to travel to lower realms to educate, teach, to heal, and so forth. It's a whole ongoing program of direct action. I mean, this is where we need as many people as we can possibly get. And, you know, sometimes I hear people say, Chrissy, you know, on the other realms, there's all these people, they see the light, so when they reincarnate, they'll come down and do Operation Prayer Power, whatever it might be, you know. And I'm sorry to have to say that it's very different thing to do it there on those higher realms, if you're advanced enough to be on them, and all due respect to you, than to do it here. And I think the real advanced ones know that. They know it better than we do, and they really appreciate it.
Yeah, there's so many distractions, I think, and so many false teachings. Only the other day, I was incredibly amazed to find that this quite well-known New Age teacher, and again, I won't mention her name, was receiving messages, and she said that she had received messages from the karmic board, who told her that she should tell mankind that we no longer had to worry about karma, and these are my words, because karma no longer existed. A negative karma, you know, we didn't have to worry about it. And it was something that had been taken away from us, kind of thing. And so life is great. This was prior to, I must admit, it was 2017, prior to COVID, the war in Ukraine and so on. So things were pretty...
She couldn't have been more wrong. It is, you know, it's a short-term popular message, like a message like you can get anything you want. That's a popular message. You can get what you need isn't so popular. But as Dr. King said, you know, he lost a lot of following by speaking the truth. But continuing with our theme, I just would like to mention one other significant thing, which I think is definitely related to adept number 6, the archetype of transmutation. And that is a move that was made on September the 2nd, 1968, in Operation Carmelite by the 5 adepts, as they were then, at the instigation of adept number 1, which caused the Lord Babaji to pursue political leadership of the Great White Brotherhood, as I mentioned, which he did. It was a result of this, and it was a more active role in certain respects than being their spiritual leader. Although, I must say, one thing that the Master of Theorius said is very interesting to me in his The Star Pupil Transmission, which is about Dr. King, which is published in the biography. But in the course of it, he does mention the Lord Babaji, and he says that one thing he says is that Dr. King he's the only one who's equal in spiritual matters to Dr. King. He states that, but he also says that he's the most active of the ascended masters. And I think that's interesting because the master is not the first word you might have thought of in the old days. You might have thought of wise, compassionate, you know, forgiving, but he uses the word active, which obviously, as far as the master theorist is concerned, is the most important thing to be. But on this event, on September the 2nd, 1968, a move was made which caused the Lord Babaji to state to adept number 1, and this is the exact statement, and I quote it now, "Number 1, I owe you more than I owe any man upon earth. Make sure that I repay this to you." And it referred to an education of the Great White Brotherhood into the need to defend themselves, not actually to go out and kill, but to defend, actually not even to defend themselves, because he has also stated, Dr. King, that they couldn't, you couldn't really, unless they allowed themselves to, they could, that they wouldn't be killed. But however, having said that, you know, under certain conditions, they could be, I'm sure, in certain forms of combat. But they're above that, but it was not the protection of them as individuals, but the protection of their power batteries that was a concern, and those being stolen and misused. And as a result of that, a lesson had to be taught to them. It was a lesson which was very difficult. It was one that grieved the adepts to do, by the way, because such is their love and respect for the ascended masters. But they had to show them that they needed to take more of an active stance in protecting their retreats from dark force attack, which could happen, particularly in a battle like Operation Carmelite that was going on. They gained permission from the Lord Babaji to do this beforehand, and they had to do it very quickly. They didn't have time because a lot was at stake for weeks of discussion. And Dr. King explains this. And so they taught it through demonstration. And it was, as I say, a big sea change done with the Lord Babbage's permission. But he also has brought about quite a reorganization as a result. And again, it's in line with the direct action and the transmutation principle.
Absolutely. You talk about their batteries, Richard. You're talking about their batteries as spiritual energy, just for the listeners, right?
Yes, thank you. No, thank you very much. Exactly, yes, yes. Power, spiritual power batteries that could be used to send energy out to the world and bring tremendous miracles, even though people wouldn't know why those miracles happened around the world, yes. And they were under threat from attack by dark forces. And because of their, and again, Dr. King does explain that they weren't wrong. So you can see why they could be rather perturbed to have a lesson taught to them in that way, but they took it. I think there's a phrase there, some of their feathers were ruffled, the dove's feathers were ruffled, but they are wonderful intelligences. They understood it. The Lord Babaji didn't need any explanation, has had that kind of experience in his past. Bearing in mind, you know, the Lord Babaji, that intelligence is, I don't know, maybe a 2,000th, maybe a 3,000th part of a Saturnian. And that's the highest planetary intelligence in this solar system.
Well, thank you, Richard. I mean, this is coming to the end of a really amazing show when you've discussed the new language for this Earth that was, and when that took place, the change from transmigration to transmutation, this language of direct action being representing that. So a lot of revelations that you've given us, Rich, and a lot of your own thoughts, which were some very fascinating insights you've passed on.
And yours, Chrissy, and yours too.
Any final words that you'd like to say?
Yes, I'd just like to close by saying we should hold this great Lord with tremendous reverence. And it's just a wonderful thing. It's a terrible thing for him, I have to say, but a wonderful thing for us that he's even on Earth. And he exemplifies in his being the exact path in every aspect that we should follow. He should be revered. He should be praised. I'm sure he doesn't wish this. He should be followed, and he probably doesn't wish that either. But by everybody on Earth, and the day will come on this Earth when every single man, woman, and child, if there are still children at that time of our evolution, will worship and revere and follow this great Lord of the Earth.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Wonderful way to close.
I must just quickly say, by the way, Chrissy, I did mean to say, we are doing, for the first time ever, a pilgrimage in honor of the six adepts. And members and sympathizers who respect and revere the six adepts are warmly invited to this. It's on Holston Down in North Devon. It's on July the 23rd, which is the exact anniversary of the charging of that mountain, the beginning of Operation Starlight in 1958. And we'll be going there for that express purpose. We'll be doing six services on that mountain with mantra. And that one will be devoted to each adept, one of those services, and it will culminate in the sixth service, which will be dedicated to this great Lord, archetype of transmutation.
How wonderful. That will be. Wish I could be there.
I wish you could, Chrissy, because you've been on so many. And your great husband, Gary. It'd be lovely if you were both here.
Yes, it would indeed. So anyone who's listening, look into that, because there's nothing like a pilgrimage on the Holston Down. And this one sounds like a fantastic, fantastic one.
Yes, usually we go up there to send energy out for healing and world peace. And, of course, we're doing that all the time, every day. And often we take a prayer power battery there, although that didn't always happen, as you know, in Dr. King's lifetime. Sometimes we did, sometimes we didn't. But this time, for the first time ever, we're going to focus entirely on the six adepts as the focus of our devotion and pilgrimage.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, gosh, Richard and Chrissy, for such an amazing show. This truly has been an initiation for us all. We certainly look forward to that pilgrimage in July. Absolutely very exciting, very exciting. As mentioned earlier, for the next Aetherius Radio Live show on June 21st, Chrissy will be joined by her guest, Brian Kniep. And if you would like to find out more on the facts mentioned during the show, please do visit aetherius.org. All the details are there, and forthcoming events and the pilgrimages. It will be give you the answers. You can connect with Richard through his website, richardlawrence.co.uk, and also with Chrissy through her website, astrologycity.com. Boy, we really hope you enjoyed the show. I certainly did. And thank you for listening, and we look forward to your company next month.